The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Clare for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Clare.
And good evening on this Yom HaAtzmaut, day of celebration for Israel and a day of celebration for the Jews around the world. Tonight, we have in the studio Craig, who's the controller, myself, Stan Claff. I'm the general secretary, the grand secretary of the Hebrew Order of David. And we're connecting today with Con Travis, a well-known name in South African radio, broadcasting, Hebrew Order of David annals, and generally, at one stage, a very big household name in South Africa. And sitting in Cape Town, and good evening, Con.
Good evening to you, Stan.
And it's good to have you on. Those of you who will remember Con Travis from the days of Biltong and Potroast, going back a couple of decades, those of you old enough to remember. If you want to SMS any comments or questions for Con, it's 34519, or WhatsApp to 061-895-1019. And please send any messages you would like. Con is a Welshman, grew up in Wales, left home at a tender age to join the military. Fill us in, Con. Tell us what you're about.
Well, what do you want to know, Stan?
I want to know where you started out, how you left home, got into the military, and how you eventually ended up in South Africa.
Okay, very, very briefly. Well, as well as I can, I'll do that. I was born in Cardiff in South Wales, of an Orthodox Jewish family. Went to Cheder there, etc., etc. And then that was in 1926. Yes, I'm now 92 and a half years old.
92 and a half years young.
My father had two brothers that emigrated from Cardiff to Wellington in New Zealand in the mid-30s. And they convinced my father he should also do the same, which he did. In 1938, the end of 38, we left Cardiff and we emigrated to Wellington in New Zealand. I went to school there, obviously, and I was actually Bel Misford in Wellington in 1939. Yes, I was a bit of a naughty boy when I was a youngster. I ran away from home and I actually stowed away, believe it or not, with the United States Marine Corps in 1942 on board one of their troop ships. And they caught me on board after we'd been out to sea quite a while. And they put me ashore in two places. One was called Espiritu Santos and New Hebrides Islands in the Pacific. And the other one became a very well-known battlefield afterwards. It was called Guadalcanal.
Right.
Okay. They sent me back to New Zealand, and I had to go through one thing and another, and my father, my uncle was in the army in New Zealand at the time, came, they had to identify me, and they released me. Wasn't good enough for me, I ran away from home again, and eventually I got into what I wanted to do as to join the Air Force. That was the Royal New Zealand Air Force. The reason I was very, very interested in joining that particular force was my father, bless him, in the First World War, was awarded the French Legion of Honor as he flew in the Royal Flying Corps. My grandfather, who was the master of what was known in those days as a cabinet maker, actually made propellers for aircraft in London in the First World War. And when we were in Wellington in New Zealand, de Havilland Aircraft Company had a factory at Rongotai in Wellington. And my grandfather was called upon, and believe it or not, he actually manufactured propellers. They were made of wood. And Wellington in the 40s. Right. Everything, yes. I managed to get in the Air Force, did my initial training down in the South Island, a place called Harewood in Christchurch. Then I went to Flying Training School in Auckland, which is in North Island, north of the North Island. And I was posted eventually to a fighter squadron. It was called 14th Squadron, Royal New Zealand Air Force. And they had just done a conversion course from the then Kitty Hawks. All the aircraft, incidentally, in New Zealand during the war were American aircraft. I believe it was known as the Lease Lend position at the time. Yes, the squadron, as I was saying, were originally equipped with Kitty Hawks, and we did a conversion course to Corsairs. Corsair was made originally as a carrier-borne aircraft because it had wings, swept-back wings, so they could take it from the flight deck of an aircraft carrier down on the lift to the hangar deck, as they call it. Our squadron, however, had a fixed-wing squadron, aircraft or fixed-wing, and we did the sightseeing tour, as we called it, of the Pacific, ending up in places like Iwo Jima and Okinawa. And then when Japan capitulated in August 25th, 1945, we actually went into Japan on a British carrier called the HMS Glory. It was a light fleet carrier. I was stationed in Japan for a period of 2 years in the occupation force. It's a place called Iwakuni, which is just a few miles south of Hiroshima. We weren't initially allowed to go into Hiroshima. We had to wait for quite a while, and finally we went in and unfortunately saw the devastation which had occurred from the AIDS bomb which had been dropped there. On my particular drone there at Iwakuni, it was called BCAIR, British Commonwealth Air Forces. There was our squadron from New Zealand. There was an Australian squadron. There was an Indian squadron, number 4 Indian squadron, and an RAF squadron. And I went around straight away trying to find out for any other Jewish people. I was the only Jew, incidentally, ever in any part of the Air Force where I was, and particularly my squadron. And I found in the Indian squadron, I found one. In the RAF, I found quite a few, including a person who became a very good friend of mine, came from Leeds in Yorkshire, who was in charge of the catering those years at Iwakuni.
A very important role, catering.
Very much so. Things have changed today, I believe. They no longer have the cooks that, excuse the expression, used to slop up the meals. I believe the catering today in the forces is done by private companies. It's outsourced. Anyhow, Jackie and I became very, very firm friends. In total, there was another one that was in the RAF police. He came from Manchester. And in all, I managed to find 14 Yiddish guys amongst all the squadrons, RAF, Indian Air Force, Australian, and myself. I then got permission to contacted, incidentally, the rabbi, the chaplain, who was in the American forces in Tokyo. He was stationed in a place called the Daiichi Building in Tokyo, which was right across the road from the Emperor's Palace. And also, incidentally, Daiichi Building was the headquarters of Douglas MacArthur, General Douglas MacArthur, who was the commander-in-chief of the Pacific operations during the war and thereafter in the occupation of Japan. The chaplain's name was Chaplain Chapman. Can never forget it. And I got permission from my big boss in Iwakuni, and his name was Air Vice Marshal Vaucher, to fly us up to Tokyo for Yom Tov in 1946. That was quite an experience. We were very privileged as well. We were introduced to General MacArthur, which was quite an occasion.
Did he come to the service?
The service was absolutely fantastic, and the accommodation, everything provided there was out of this world. It really was very, very, very well received. Okay, after doing 2 years there. I went, my parents incidentally went back to Britain from New Zealand in 1946 whilst I was in Japan. And, when it came time for me to be demobbed, as we called it in those days, demobilized, I asked for permission and got it to be, demobilized in London through the RAF and New Zealand House, which was in the Strand in London in those years. I then went back to Britain, flew incidentally from Iwakuni to Hong Kong in a Sunderland flying boat, and I escorted a Japanese admiral, and his name was Takeo Tada, to Hong Kong, where he was tried for war crimes.
For war crimes.
From there, I was put on another troop ship. It was an Indian troop ship called the Ranchi, and my memory's quite good. And went back to Britain by sea, arriving in Britain, and then going to London, getting discharged, going back to Cardiff.
And in the meantime, you were fluent in Japanese?
I beg your pardon?
I say you became fluent in Japanese?
I didn't become fluent. I still understand and remember. Yes, I still under, couldn't remember quite a few things about it. In Britain then, I played quite a lot of soccer, as you call it. In Britain they call it football, in my time. And when I arrived back, I actually played in Cardiff for Cardiff City, not for the first team, mainly for the reserves, as they call it. And on two or three occasions I did play in the third team when our two professional goalkeepers were injured.
Con, just before we continue with that, today I think Cardiff City needs you because I think they've just been relegated again. On that point, if we're going to take an ad break, we'll be back in a moment.
This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
We're back with Con Travis. Last, he arrived in London, played for Cardiff City, and did you play for Wales?
I played as an amateur for Wales, yes, and I also captained the British Maccabi side and the Maccabiah in Israel in 1953.
Did you win?
No, we did not win. Believe it or believe it not, we were actually, Israel won that year, and we were put out in second place by South Africa.
Amazing.
It's a very, very small world because the South African, I played in goal. I was a goalkeeper, and the South African that scored against me, they beat us 2-1, was a guy from Cape Town. His name was Jackie Mendel. And when I arrived in South Africa many, many years later, I wanted to keep fit. And when I was in Johannesburg, I played for we had a team then, Jewish Guild, and they were in the football league here. And who was playing in that team? Jackie Mendel was playing. He was up there from Cape Town.
Amazing.
Anyhow, that's beside the point. Okay, we're back in London, and I went to London University, did a course in aeronautical engineering, and I forgot to tell you, incidentally, that during the war as well, I acted as a compere in some shows. We had to make our own entertainment and did a little bit in the way of humor. Anyhow, so back in Britain, then I played soccer and studied. I got married in England at Cardiff in 1949. And I had a son from that marriage. My son is now a retired lawyer in Toronto from that marriage. And when I finished with the university, I was employed by the Havilland Aircraft Company in Hatfield in Hertfordshire in London, where we were making the then Comet. Okay. We had problems, as you know, with the Comet, and then at the beginning of 1956.
What was the problem that the plane took off but wouldn't land? Is that the, was that the?
No, it had, some major problems, as most people knew. In January 1956, I was made an offer to go to Canada, to Toronto, to work on a new fighter aircraft, the Orwell fighter, for a company, Avro Aircraft, which was AV Row, called Avro Aircraft in Canada. And I'd like people, if they can, to look this up. It was an unbelievable fighter aircraft. It was called the Avro Arrow. In 1956, it was a delta wing aircraft. There was nothing in the world, it's quite a statement I know to make, to even touch it. There were four prototypes of this aircraft we made, and the then Prime Minister of Canada at the time, Diefenbaker, at the end of 59, going to use the expression, canned the whole project, and he went and he bought American fighter aircraft. Putting out work, a tremendous amount of people, thousands and thousands of people, because you had the engine people, the instrument people, you had the a million and one different things involved, not just the aircraft company itself. On that Sunday night,
can I interrupt you for a moment? There's a break in the line every few seconds. I don't know if you're touching something on the speaker or the...
I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. I'm very sorry. Okay now?
Yes, that's much better.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, on Sunday night, a friend of mine, Canadian friend of mine, took me along to Benet, believe it or not, being an HOD man, to a Benet meeting. And in that evening, he had to get up, introduce yourself, and I said, come on, tell a couple of jokes, if you know a couple of jokes, the way we usually do it, which I did do. After the meeting was over, a gentleman came over to me and introduced himself, and his name was Bernie Orenstein, and I said, what? He said, are you a comedian? I said, good gracious, no, I've been aeronautical engineering. He said, but you told some jokes, and lovely, and delivery and everything was fine, you know. He said, where are you working? I said, I'm not working. I'm funny enough, just as the other day I became basically unemployed. He said, are you interested by any chance in going into the entertainment business? I said, right now, I'm interested in anything. Why? He said, well, come along and see me. Gave me his card. He was a producer at Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in the TV side. Bernie Orenstein. So I went along to see him, and he said to me, look, if you're interested, see what I can do for you, but I'll tell you candidly, he said, there are a couple of things, delivery, I'll help you better with your delivery and any rough edges type of thing, I'll fix.
Knock them out of you.
So, It must have taken about 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and he called me one day. He said, you coming in there? I said, yes. He said, good. I go in to see him, and he says, right, believe it or not, he says, I've got a show for you. I said, what? He said, yes, you're going to compare a TV show here. It's a new show, and it's called Pick the Stars. The star of the show is a very good-looking, tall, handsome, dark, mustachioed man. Who's got a magnificent voice, and there'll be a husband and wife team, a comedy walk-on team, and you'll compose the show. The first half that is professional, and the second half is a talent competition. Anyhow, I managed to get the show. Oh, incidentally, that good-looking singer, his name was Robert Goulet, became the film star.
Wow.
Oh, sorry, Bob Goulet then became Robert Goulet, the film star. Yeah. Okay. So we did the show. It was very successful. Then we went around Canada. They changed the show to the name of Talent Caravan. And from them, I was very, very fortunate. I got some wonderful engagements. Canadian National Exhibition with Victor Borgia. I don't know if you people sure. remember him. Punctuation. Yep. And, yes, and even worked in cabaret. Only introducing him with Sammy Davis Jr. in Toronto. Work with other people, a lot of other people, and in 1960, I did the Lions International Convention in Chicago, and I did that show with Rosemary Clooney, Edie Gourmet, and I brought on that night Edie Gourmet's husband, Steve Lawrence, who was actually in the American Army at the time, and got them to do a duet as well. I did cabaret and shows and one thing and another, and a bit of TV in America and USA. Even went to Vegas. I was in Vegas only in the lounge at the Tropicana in at the end of August in 1960. From there, I went back to Britain. And very, very fortunately, I managed to work with a lot of big names in Britain. People will remember people like Max Bygraves, Benny Hill, you name it, Al McCogan, Cliff Richards and the Shadows. There's a million and one, both in radio, TV, and worked in the nightclubs in London, Churchill, Gargoyle, places like that, and theatres. And in those years, they had many, many theatres all over Britain. I used to get a week's work in in theatres right throughout Britain. What else can I tell you?
So how did you come to South Africa?
Yeah, now, that's it now. In January 1963... I was made an offer by my agent to come to South Africa, and I had met quite a number of South African, Jewish South Africans, in the place in London called the Overseas Visitors Club. Those, some of you listening, may remember that very, very well. And I grabbed the chance, or incidentally, I was divorced, my wife and I divorced, at the end of 1960, and, when I came here, I was single. I made an offer to come here to do a show here, and the show was with the American film star and singer Connie Francis. Wow. I grabbed the idea. I came here. In fact, I came a little bit beforehand, had a bit of a break, and I was introduced to my wife, to a lady who became my wife on a blind date, and decided, right, get married and stay in South Africa. We did the show, yes, we did it at Ellis Park, as I said, in 1963. It was quite novel there. We did it at Ellis Park tennis courts in the open air, and we opened on the Friday night, good Yiddish boy, to an audience of 9,000 people. It was unheard of in South Africa. Remember, at that stage, there was no television here.
Right.
Then we did the tour from Johannesburg after doing the shows there to Durban, Port Elizabeth, and to Cape Town. When I finished, went back to Johannesburg, not much later, got married and did whatever I could do in South Africa at that time, the way of cabaret, a bit of Springbok radio, yes, you remember it? And, went to Port Elizabeth, East London, went up to Rhodesia, did cabaret, radio, and yes, they had black and white TV in those years there as well. That was in November 1963. Came back again, and...
Then you settled in Durban.
No, I didn't settle, actually, Stan. What happened was... you couldn't make a proper living in those years from, entertainment. So I started doing promotions for different companies. And first company I did a big promotion with was the company called Teltron. I don't know if you people know. The Aubrey Snyder and Joe Lappin. And I introduced for them items like... B&O hi-fi equipment, salt and hot trays, believe it or not, cross pens, believe it or not, and Sanyo itself as well, along with quite a few other items. They were quite impressed with what I did for them, and they asked me in the company. Well, I said, fine, made me an offer. I accepted their offer. Then they turned around and said, look, we have some problems in Durban. What's your problems there? We have a wonderful guy there who is been our agent, but we're not doing the business we should doing it. It's a big growth area, one thing or another. What should we do? I went down. I had a look around. I came back. I reported and told them I think we should open a branch there. So Aubrey Snyder turned around and said, well, wonderful. Who are we going to send? I said, send me. Now, I was already married and had a young son, Stephen, was born then. And he said, fine, you're willing to go? I said, yep. So down I went to Durban. And I started Teltron in Durban. I was there doing very, very nicely for Teltron. I was there for a period of 5 years. That was from 1965 to 1970. Incidentally, whilst there again, did a great number of shows in the City Hall, on the beachfront there, and one thing and another. And also with two very, very good friends who are now deceased. One was Dennis Port, who was a very well-known Jewish Springbok water polo player, and the other one's name was Bobby Bloom. We started Maccabi Soccer in Durban, and we won the league there 3 years running. it was great and kept me young and kept me fit and one thing and another. It was a great life in Durban. I made many, many friends, a lot of now who are even down here living in Cape Town. Right.
So how did you come to the HOD?
How did I come through Durban? Whilst I was in Durban, two friends of mine, one who's still a member and still in Johannesburg, two friends, one was named was Harry Proops, and the other one, Charlie, and they approached me and told me what the HOD do and one thing or other, which I was very, very interested in doing something to help people, which I've tried to do having been in the entertainment business over many, many years. Did goodness knows how many I've lost count of how many charity shows to raise money for different necessities. I went along. I was initiated into the Hebrew Order of David 52 years ago in Durban in 1967 and became quite active there and involved in the fundraising efforts and everything in the most wonderful organization that I've ever belonged to because they do such wonderful work. I always have thought it and always will think it and always do try and do my help to be involved in doing such things.
Well, you have to realize, and I think listeners have to realize that, it's through people like yourself who dedicate a lot of their time, all their free time, in fact, to the organization. So it's not that it's a wonderful organization on its own, but it's a fact that the members of the organization, like yourself, have dedicated so much time to make it what it is.
I learned one thing, Stan. You say about that. Yes, you call it dedication. To me, it's not. Unfortunately, there are so many people who are in need and need help. And my father taught me something many, many years ago. He was the chairman of an organization in Cardiff called the Bikkur Chaylim, which was basically very similar. They used to raise funds to help people financially. And he told me something. Listen to me, my boy. Do something. Always try and help people in your life. But do it not expecting a reward for it. And he said, I want to tell you something. You have no idea how you will be rewarded for what you've done in so many different ways. And it's so true, Stan.
Oh, man.
Because at at 92, to have reached this age, secondly, I'm in perfect health. I take no pills or anything like that whatsoever. And I'm being blessed. I was blessed with a good wife, 3 sons. I have 6 grandchildren, and I even have 3 great-grandchildren in England as well. So that is your reward. Without looking for it, believe you me, my involvement is fantastic. Then at the beginning of 1970, Benny Sloan, who was well known from TEDx, called me in Durban. I had lunch with him and made me an offer to join the organization in Johannesburg. I accepted his offer, and we left Durban, and we went to Owen Stanley. My second son was born in Durban, Linton. And, yes, by the way, both my boys became member of the Hebrew of David, okay? Yeah. And we went back to Johannesburg. That was at in March 1970 when I joined TEDx. I was in the Sony division at TEDx, and and when I came back, I got very involved, more importantly, with the Hebrew Order of David. One of the greatest moments, thrills, and everything I've had in my years with the Order was with my late friend, bless him, his name was Jackie Stoch. We came up with the idea of starting a lodge where I had gone to live in Santon. Santon in those years had only about 580 Jewish families. I'm going back now, you remember, to 1970.
Before the Rinderpest.
Yes, and Jackie, bless him, also was the starter. It was his idea to start a shul. Santon shul was started from the idea from Brother Jackie Stoch of the HOD. I was involved with him as some of the other of our people who became fellows who became members of the Hebrew Order of David and joined our Santon Lodge. There was a Dr. Frank Radomski, for instance. And incidentally, I don't know if she's there or not. Kathy Kaler, your founder of High FM, her father Max was my first secretary for many years of the Hebrew Order of David in Santon, and the lodge was known and is still known as Lodge Negev.
Con, we're going to take a quick ad break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Lodge Negev, the growth, your role as Grand President, and also other activities in Cape Town, etc. We're taking a quick break.
This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And we're back with Con Travis. Let me talk. Sometimes you have to interrupt Con because he's not short-winded, but what he does do and what he does say is always worth listening to. Con, let's talk about the start of Lodge Negev in the Hebrew Order of David in Santon at a time when early 1970s when the Hebrew Order of David was peaking.
It was wonderful. It was quite an occasion. We went around and we signed initially 54 new members, residents in Santon at that time. And we started meeting there at the old Jewish Guild Country Club. And then not long afterwards, when the HOD Center, our beautiful center in Orchards, was completed, we went and held our meetings there.
That was in 1974.
That was in 1974, yes.
So yep. The lodge actually year is 45 years old.
That's correct. In February, it was 1974, 45 years old, 100% correct. I had some wonderful, wonderful members who really and truly got involved. For instance, I am going to tell the listeners now, one of our major projects that we did was for an organization called SA Guide Dogs. And you, interviewing me, bless you, were responsible for raising the amount of over 40,000 rand, which was a lot of money in those years, for guide dogs. I'm sorry. The project was called Guide Jogs, and I think it was the Nashua Marathon, if my memory is right.
The Nashua Marathon, and actually, Conway raised much more because we actually, with that money, we built a set of kennels for them.
That's correct. Yes. Okay. 100% correct. And it was so wonderful to be able to, beside sponsoring the purchasing of guide dogs, we built the kennels and everything for them as well. And to you, I say, Yishikeach, and I mean it, because it was your idea and you put the whole damn thing together yourself. Yes, we were involved with you, but really? So it was a lot of money in those years, I can assure you.
Okay, but Con, I'm doing the interview with you, so I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell the listeners about you, and you're going to tell the listeners about you. People have heard about me, and this is not about me tonight. This is definitely about you, your contribution in starting the Hebrew Order of David Lodge Negev in Sandton, a lodge which is still running today. A lodge which launched you into the upper echelons of the Hebrew Order of David. Today, Con Travis is not only the founder member, he's an honorary member of the Hebrew Order of David International. That is, with lodges around the world, he's an honorary member. He's a recipient of the Order of Merit, the Shield of David, the highest accolades to Con. And it's not just because of his having formed the lodge, but the fact that he was the father, the patron of Lodge Negev, and all over the years has flown the flag of Lodge Negev. Even when he emigrated a couple of years semigrated to Cape Town, where he leads the way in the Cape Town Lodge Golan. But your work over the years, all the activities that took place, and your willingness to be involved in activities far and beyond what it took. Not only because you tell bad jokes at these functions, but because you're willing to stand up, you can talk off the cuff, you're a consummate performer. And when it comes to running events and running a lodge, you know how to get the best out of people. And so, yes, I was involved in doing some projects, but it was only through the fact that I was supported by members like yourself, you know, presidents of the lodge who were willing to back the whole project, that it was possible to even do it without any hitch. And we really ran some other projects. I mean, going back to the Biltong and Pot Roast evenings, the Yontif Joys, the fact that we worked with places like the multiple sclerosis home in Sandton, to which your name still is on the board. And so just give us a sense of the early days when you formed the lodge, how you went about getting the members to come in. I know you went from door to door, knocking on doors and bringing them in. And a lot of those members are still members today.
Yes, thank God for that. Yes, I was very, very honored. I became what is known as the consecration president of Lodge Negev. And we got involved in projects, not just Jewish projects, but other than Jewish projects, non-Jewish projects as well. The first biggest project we got involved with was Forest Farm, cerebral palsy.
I meant cerebral palsy. I said multiple sclerosis, but it was actually cerebral palsy. That's the Forest Farm.
Yeah, correct. Yes, cerebral palsy. Remember, we gave them actually when television came out a year or so later, nearly 2 years later, after the consecration of our lodge, we presented them with their first television set as well. I can never ever forget it. Yes, our lodge and our members, bless them, were very, very active, and really and truly, Arcadia Orphanage, which was still there at the time. Our guys did some wonderful things there. We refurbished all the living quarters there and left things like radios by the bedsides of the residents there. We were very involved with the following: Selwyn Siegel Hostel, Sandringham Gardens, our parents' home, the Sandton Civil Defense. A couple of our members in particular were very involved in that.
Built the library.
Operation Hunger. And Alexander Township, which was the township in our area in Sandton. They had some floods there and they had fires there. where we went in with foodstuff, medical supplies, cooking utensils, food, and we even established a proper library there in Alexander Township. Three of our members started an education system for non-whites, from basic learning right up to bookkeeping.
So I have to tell you about Con. Con is a man who's got his own archives. He keeps memorabilia and lists of items going back to days of yore. So what you hear him rattling through his papers there is referring to his notes, of which he has many. It's a compliment, Con. It's a compliment.
Thank you, Stan. Two of us from our lodge went to represent the Hebrew Order of David in Lodge Negev to a place called Rietfontein, which was also a smaller township, Orange Farm in the Free State. Selwyn Fain, worthy brother Selwyn Fain, also a past Grand President myself, went there, and we actually met Mandela that day. And we got involved. We saw that the school had no ceiling, so we put our lodge negative, put a ceiling in the school, and then we supplied them with stationery, pens, pencils, books, etc., etc. These are a few, little things that we've done. The lodge has done so much. You mentioned about Yont of Joy. We stood there, pick and pay, collecting items prior to Yont of. Then our members and their families came to the HOD center where we had a production line, if you like, where we took all the items that we had collected and put them into bags, beautiful bags, which were made in China, imported from China with the HOD logos on. I've still got mine here. I'm very, very proud of it, and distributed to families in need in Johannesburg. This was done. We used to do it ourselves, and then it became a little difficult going into some of the premises in Hillbrow and Berea, as the elderly, the elderly people wouldn't even come to the door, one thing or another. They were frightened. You heard chains being undone and the locks being done. So I got hold of the lady at Kosher Meals on Wheat, Kosher Mobile Meals, and we're in association with them. They've been doing it ever since, I believe. They did the distribution of our Yont of Joy projects to these people.
So, Con, I want to focus for the last few minutes a little bit on what you're doing in Cape Town. Give us some information about Lodge Golan and the Brethren, what they're doing, projects that you have on the go. We have 5 minutes left before I'm going to make some announcements about other projects. But if you have some projects, and then also just give an email address or a phone number if anybody wants to contact you.
Ernie, with pleasure. I came here to live in Cape. My wife passed away 11 years ago in Johannesburg, and I came to live with a lovely lady here in Cape Town 6 years ago, and I immediately got involved with the one lodge that we have left here, a lodge known as Lodge Golan. In Cape Town many, many years ago, we had four lodges here who were very, very active, but owing to
immigration
and the aging of members. Anyhow, the president at the time when I came down was a wonderful man, who's Dr. Michael Sandler, who's a retired pathologist and was a member in Kimberley, coming back to live here where he came from in Cape Town on retirement. Unfortunately, after not very many months, Michael got very sick and he passed away.
Yes, sir.
I acted as the president of the lodge then and was elected into the position of president 3 years ago. And
they won't let you leave. And they won't let you leave.
And I introduced a number of ideas here, which was most successful, being in Lodge Negev and the Order. You mentioned Yont of Joy. We've just completed now hampers distributed prior to Pesach. most successfully, wonderful, wonderful. There are 500 people here in Cape Town, Jewish people, individuals, families in need, and are being assisted with food, and accommodation, etc., and schooling for the younger children as well. We are extremely involved in another major, major project here called One to One, which is a non-Jewish project where they bus in to the Cape Town Stadium underneath in the stands, 3,500 mentally and physically handicapped people. Half come in the morning, half come in the afternoon. We are involved there along with other organizations such as Lions International, Rotary, Round Table, Herzliya Schools, a lot of people involved in helping these people, giving them food for the day, cold drinks, clothing, toys, games, and magazines, and you name it. It's quite remarkable, and it's rewarding, but very, very not easy to see each year. We'll be doing this again in August. We've also been, doing something here. I got involved, as I did in Johannesburg, with a bingo evening, and we've raised money from charity bingo evenings here. They've never seen prizes here in Cape Town like I managed to get from a lot of organizations, companies who have been giving us, Lodge Negev, prizes for our bingo over many, many years. They've done the same for me here, right here in Cape Town.
Con, I'm going to ask you to wrap up. Just give us a number if they can contact you. And also, I want to thank you if you want them to contact the office, I'm happy to give them the number. If you don't want to give your number on air.
I can do it right now. No problem. Telephone number 021-434-5902, email address Conrad Travis Agency, AGENCY, @gmail.com.
And I wanted to say in the last few minutes before we wrap with you, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for a fascinating story. I think it's time to write the book. I hope you're busy with that. Because
I am, Stan. Believe it or believe it not, this is being done, a book, and they spoke me into trying to do a video on it as well. Okay.
Very well. Okay, that's wonderful, and I'm sure it'll be a bestseller. And thank you once again.
How proud I am, and I mean how proud I am to be a member of such an organization as the Hebrew Order of David International. Incidentally, I was also involved in the formation of overseas lodges, especially in America, as you know.
Absolutely. Traveled with me, went to Boca Raton, went to Houston in Texas.
Houston and Toronto.
And Toronto in particular, where the lodges are now formed and are now flourishing. So, Con, thank you very much. It's been a wonderful hour. It's flown by, and thank you for your time, your effort, and all your work in Cape Town. I'm gonna wrap now. Thank you, and thanks for connecting. Just a few announcements before we leave you and wish you a good Shabbos. We have some projects on the Hebrew Order of David. On the 21st of May, we have Joel Stransky coming to talk at the Hebrew Order of David at the HOD Center. It's on the 21st of May. It's 80 Rand per person. The money is going to Lumo Hawk Foundation, which is a project close to Joel Stransky's heart. And it's for testing eyesight of underprivileged children and supplying them with the glasses, the spectacles. We also have on the 16th of May, that's coming up next week, Ezra Scher will be entertaining the royals. That's the elderly in the community who want to attend. It starts at 10 o'clock at the HOD Center. It's a morning of entertainment. Of course, it's during the Omer, so it will be a cappella. But Ezra Scher, as you well know, is the cantor at Pine Street Shul, and he will be entertaining everyone. On the 5th of June, that's next month, is the Dr. Herzl Golf Day, and more about that will come your way. If you need to contact anybody in connection with these projects, it's 011-640-3017. We have two other projects which are being announced in the, is the Day in the Life of a Jew in South Africa. And if you want to send a photograph or any photographs, that's how it works. Send a photograph to admin@hrdavid.org. And we're going to publish these photographs ultimately, we hope, in a coffee book of sorts. And there's 25,000 rand worth of prizes up for grabs. So please avail yourselves of that. And it remains only for me when I'm being told that I must wrap. And it's been an interesting evening, fascinating having Contravis on the show. Thank you to Craig, our controller, and I wish you all a good Shabbos.